It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast. Hey, everybody, it's Mark Yeagy. Welcome to another edition of the Wealth Architect Podcast. Today, we are talking numbers. We're talking numbers that are going to save you money. I don't know about you, but your biggest number that you're ever going to pay in anything is going to be in taxes. And today, we have an expert to talk to us about taxes, because I don't know about you, but when I missed that tax class in high school, I was in an algebra class and a geometry class. So, because I use those all the time. Anyway, our guest today is Shauna, the Tax Goddess. She's a two-time published author and the founder of Tax Goddess Business Services. Tax Goddess is a fully digital firm with a skilled team of over 65 people worldwide that have saved their clients over $1 billion in taxes. Shauna advises business owners, investors, and entrepreneurs to actively create custom strategies to maximize deductions and reduce their tax burdens to the legal minimum. She's ranked in the top 1% of tax strategists in the USA. She's been featured on many platforms like Forbes, CNN, Money, Entrepreneur, CBS, Fox, ABC, and others. Let's welcome Shauna, the Tax Goddess. Hi, Shauna.
Hi, how are you?
Good. That's a great last name, the Tax Goddess.
It suits me well with the red hair and the flame.
You got kids that are boys, but you know, whatever, you know, like if that's your last name. But anyway, welcome to the show. What's going on? We're going to talk about saving people some money.
We are. It's my favorite thing. Yeah. So I'm all about it.
Yeah. Well, I like the result. I got to be honest. I don't love talking about taxes, but you know, that's why they have chocolate and vanilla, right? They have people like you that handle those kind of things, and people like me that try to make people money. It's a, you know, offensive defense, right?
It's a good thing. And you got to make it and then save it, and then you get to keep it, and then you do whatever you want with it. So it's all the flavors rolled together. I love it.
Absolutely. How did you get into taxes? You seem like you're rolling with it and you kind of love it. Tell us how you got into it.
Absolutely. So very long story short, I actually started off in astrophysics. So completely different numbers brain, right? I came home from college. This was just a little bit ago, you know, a few years back. College. You're very flattering. Came back from college, sitting at the breakfast table with my mom. Now, my mom is German, very stoic, very, you know, everything happens and everything has a pattern. And to sit across the table from her, she's opening the mail, throws down a letter, pushes back from the table. Are you okay? What's going on? What's happening? Yeah, well, you know, a notice from the IRS. I mean, I've got a CPA, I've got a tax attorney, but no matter what I do, they can't get my taxes low enough. Well, you know, when you're a goddess as a child, your mother, right? She is my goddess. And when she gets upset, a redheaded daughter figures out how to solve the problem. So here we are now, geez, how many years later? Well, since that day, probably about 30 years later. And of course, went into CPA, master's in tax, certified tax coach, certified tax practitioner, certified tax strategist, any kind of certification, knowledge, detail, anything I could get my hands on. And of course, now she's down in the 6% range, which is our average for our clients. So
everybody's nice.
Happy. Yeah.
So you've got lots of creds and you seem to like this. I mean, there's a tax code from the IRS that's this thick. So you get to read all that fun stuff and weave through it. What are some strategies that you help people utilize? Let's start with some business people, because we have a lot of business people to listen to the podcast.
You got it. Well, and listen, entrepreneurs and business owners are my absolute favorite, because the tax code is written for you, literally. Yeah. So we look at a little over 2,000 strategies. I'm pretty sure we don't have 6 weeks to go over all of them, but do you mind if I pick out some of my favorites? Would that be acceptable?
I'd love it.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll get a few people in our audience that are going to like these. Go ahead.
I'm all about the favorite ones. Now, let me back up, because I feel like I need to explain something just really quickly here. When you talk to the standard CPA, somebody preparing tax returns, okay, they're very different than a tax strategist. And that's an important distinction, because if you take the strategies you hear about today and you go to your standard tax preparer, you're going to get one of two responses. The first one, and we hear it about in 80% of cases, arms crossed, you can't do that. Okay. If you get that response and you've heard a strategy from me, you can just have to figure out how. Okay. And it's okay Not every CPA wants to sign off on a tax return with a strategy they don't understand. That's why you need a strategist in play.
I get that.
The second response you're going to get is, well, that sounds awfully aggressive, right? I don't know how I feel about signing off on that. And that's an okay response. No problem with that. When we look at tax strategies as a tax strategist, we look at everything with what we call the aggression scale. So 0 to 10, 0 meaning the IRS never calls you, never, ever, except for a random audit. Can't do anything about that. To a 10, meaning we're all going to jail. Right. Now, I'm a redhead. Okay. So 10, red and orange do not look good together. It's not happening. I don't go to a level 10. Level 9 is Al Capone doing some shady kind of stuff, hoping you're not getting caught. A level 8 is everything is legal. Everything's above board. You might get a call, right? The IRS might want to see some documentation. They might want to see some proof, but everything's legal. Everything's above board. You're good. So when I give you these strategies today, I will also tell you what the aggression scale is, because for the listeners out there, when you ask yourself that question, you, your spouse, whoever's signing that return, okay, most entrepreneurs are a 7-8, right? That's how you became an entrepreneur. You're a little bit more about the risk, legal, right? We want to do everything above board, but your spouse may be a 2. So you need to be looking at how, as a family, are you going to apply a tax strategy? If it's a level 8 strategy, your spouse may not want to do that. Okay. So I always like to lay that baseline.
That makes sense. I like that approach. It also gives the power back to the customer too, right? The taxpayer.
Absolutely. Well, you're the person that has to build your financial team. So it's okay to have a bookkeeper to level 2. They're not making tax decisions for you. You might want a CPA that's at least a 4 or a 5, right? They're willing to look at strategies as long as it can be explained. Is it legal? Those kinds of things. Your strategist must meet your level. So if you're an 8, you're going to want an 8, right? So definitely the place to start. Okay.
So just real quick before you launch in,
yeah.
you do tax preparation
or we
you
do
strategy? Okay.
So we do. We do both. Yeah. Now, you know, you get cases where, listen, somebody's been with their CPA for 20 years. Okay.
Yeah.
And they love their CPA. They've never had an audit. They're totally, everything's great, great relationship, right? We don't want to break up a happy home. That's not what we do. Okay. But if your CPA says, well, listen, you know, I really just want to prepare returns. I don't want to dig in the details. We will work with the CPA, which right. is in a way the perfect combination, because you can get the strategies at the level you want. The strategist can explain to the CPA why it's legal, why it's above board, answer all the questions, right? And the CPA has somebody to rely on to feel confident about signing that return.
Got
so
it.
The combination is a good combination if you love your CPA and you want to keep your CPA. So
sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay.
Let's do some strategies.
Let's do strategies. This is the fun stuff. We got to save some money. All right. So the first one, okay. Ordinary, necessary, and reasonable. Now that sounds very vague. It sounds very broad. So how does this apply? Anything. This is the definition by the IRS. Anything that you, for your specific business, can explain why it's ordinary, necessary, and reasonable can be a tax deduction. Now, okay, Shauna, I mean, that sounds fine. We all need pens, right? Ordinary, necessary, and reasonable. We all need paper. We're already deducting those things. What about a yacht? Okay. If you want a yacht, how can you make a yacht ordinary, necessary, and reasonable in your business? Okay. One of our clients, as a perfect example, was an influencer. Okay. Influencers, you see them all the time with sure. the Rolexes and the Lamborghinis and the yachts. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, in his case, he actually set up masterminds on the yacht, right? People would come, they would hang out with him, they'd learn all about marketing and sales. He would charge tickets. We were able to write off a $1 million yacht for his business specifically because it was ordinary, necessary, and reasonable.
All right. I'm going to stop you there. Do you mind?
Love it.
All right. I'm going to throw a couple of questions at you, because
let's do it.
If you get to explain it, what if you got a person on the other side, an IRS person that says, oh no, it's not ordinary and reasonable and explainable and all that kind of stuff. You know, who's,
yep.
And then the second part of it is my, you know, more cynical side. And that is, what about innocent until proven guilty? Like, I'm doing the yacht write-off because I need it, whether you guys think I should do it or not.
Go ahead and
totally
address.
Different matter. I love it. So two questions there. So the first question is, okay, I think it's ordinary, necessary, and reasonable. I've got proof. I've sold clients. I've made money with it. I've done everything the IRS has asked me to do in order to take a write-off, right? I didn't just buy a yacht and then not make any income. Like the IRS likes profit, right? They want some money, right? So ordinary, necessary, reasonable. I've done all the things. I've got all my documentation. I've got pictures of all of us on the yacht, right? I've proved that I've used it for business. I get in an audit with an agent, and the first agent, very important distinction here, the first agent says, nope, don't agree, disagree, get all that off. Okay. The government actually has a system for how you deal with this. Okay. Now, if the first agent disagrees with what you've said, they can say no, disallowed. You can take it up a notch and up a notch and up a notch. Now, the question is, how big is this deduction you're looking at? If it's a $25,000 Rolex, you've already spent a bunch of time in an audit. If that was the only thing they disallowed, do you want to fight it? If it's important enough for you, you can fight it. You can ask for an appeal. You can go up a level. You can go to court. You can go to superior court. I mean, there are levels here, okay? You can even go to something called the taxpayer advocate if the IRS did something wrong. So for example, if you gave all the proof, but the agent didn't read or look at any of it and said, nope, I just disagree, you know, putting on blinders, that's the IRS agent not doing their job. You can go to an entirely different division called the taxpayer advocate and say, they're not doing their job, right? And they're disallowing something. So I've got a problem. Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Now, second issue here, right, is all right, fine. So I've done my deduction. I've got my boat. I'm very happy with it. And I want to make sure that I am writing it off in the proper way. Did I get your question right? I want to make sure I'm answering your second question.
Yeah, I mean, it was basically innocent till proven guilty was kind of the premise of the question.
Yeah. So technically you are. I mean, that is the way it's written. Okay. It's not the way it feels, which is an entirely different issue. And right. The IRS knows that I call them the mafia. So NSA, wherever you're listening. Okay. Yes, it's innocent until proven guilty. Okay. But it is your job. And that is written. It is your job to have all of the documentation. So we go back to the boat thing, right? If you just say it was a write-off and I held business events, okay, so where are the pictures? Where's the agenda? Where's the travel log? Where are the miles? Where's all of the proof? It is your job to have the proof. So yes, it is innocent until proven guilty. Not how the IRS looks at it. Okay. So they will come ask you if the numbers are out of whack, right? So we do also look at trend analysis when you're looking at a tax return. If you've been going along making $300,000 a year, and all of a sudden you buy a $1 million yacht, and so you're now at negative 700,000 for that 1 year, right? You bet your bottom dollar they're going to come talk to you, right? So you better have the proof. You better have the documentation.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
Well, thanks for answering that, because that popped into my head, and I'm sure if it's me, it's other people too. Go ahead.
It's everybody else. Absolutely. Now, one of the things that I love about ordinary, necessary, and reasonable is that it can be applied to anything. So take, for example, and I always use myself, I have 5 dogs, okay? And they are big. They eat me out of house and home, okay? I've got 2 boxer mixes, 2 German Shepherds, and a Great Dane Cane Corso, okay? So between the 5 of them, they eat basically a horse a day, right? It's a chunk of food, all right. Now, on the other side of that, I have client information at my property, right? And it's my job as a CPA to protect client information.
Got it.
Do you think if you walked up to my home and you saw 2 boxer mixes, 2 German Shepherds, and a Great Dane Cane Corso, all black, staring at you out of the front window, that you would try to break into this house and steal information? Would that be a wise choice?
I would say probably no, but if I were playing devil's advocate here, I would go, you only need 1 dog.
Ooh, I like it. Let's talk about it. Okay. You're asking great questions, Mark. I love it. You're right. General deterrence, you only need 1 dog. That's fair. Maybe I don't need 5 dogs.
Reasonable, 1 dog.
Reasonable is 1 dog. Okay, I'll give you a perfect example. The other day, the landscapers walked into the backyard without telling me to put the dogs away. Okay? So now I actually have literal proof if they ever ask. Okay? When I walked outside, because I heard my dogs barking, you know, that bark, like there's a problem, mom, come out here, there's a problem, something's happening. All five of the dogs had chased the poor guy up the tree. Okay.
Wow.
Right. They had him pinned from all five sides. He was not coming down out of that tree. All right. Now I'm very happy that he was fast. Okay. One dog, somebody could have run away from. Two, maybe. Three, probably not. So you're right. Ordinary, necessary, and reasonable. Is it ordinary that I have security? Absolutely. Is it necessary? Yes, I have client information here. Reasonable? Maybe I only get 3 days and three dogs and not all five dogs.
All great right, more question. Devil's advocate coming your way.
Love it. Let's do it.
Great. You got five dogs. You eat, you know, $100 worth of food a day. But you know what? Yeah, you've got the dogs, but you get to personally use the dogs for 95% of your pleasure when you're at home and not working. So therefore, you know, you can't write off 100% of the dogs, can you?
Well, so let me ask you about a general security system. If you have a home office and you have a general security system at your home, right? It's either on or it's not on, right? You either have it or you don't. You can't install it for the 5% of the time that is business use, right?
Oh, I like this answer. That's what I'm talking about right there. This is good stuff.
And there we go. Right. So I love it, Mark, because you're coming at it from the standpoint of an auditor is going to try to throw you off your game.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you need to be looking at when you're talking about the story behind whatever the deduction is what are those devil advocate questions? Which way are they going to try to, well, what about this? Well, I can't have a dog and be like, hey, a burglar's coming. Can you release the hounds? Like that doesn't work. Right? The dogs are either here and they're trained or they're not, one of the two. So great question. Okay. So this can be applied to absolutely anything. Okay. Now we hear it, especially for people on camera, clothing, makeup, hair, nails, a lot of these things that general CPAs will tell you, no, absolutely not deductible. Okay. Clothing is one of my favorite stories. I had a client, we talked about clothing and I said, listen, clothing really has to be logoed. You know, you need to have your logo, or it needs to be worn only for that purpose. So for example, Mark, if you only wear that blue shirt on camera, every time you're on camera, and that's your signature, right? Is this blue shirt. Okay. It's a different story. So of course I had a client go out and logo every single piece of his clothing down to his socks and underwear. Okay. So it all depends on what you think is important as to what you want to write off and how much documentation you're willing to do about whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Interesting. Hey, it's Mark Yeager here to tell you about our Cash Flow Machine trading program that's designed to teach you how to make safe, reliable income. Now, we shoot for 2 to 4% a month of income and growth in your portfolio. And we have courses to teach you how to do this yourself or inside a mastermind community. And the best part of that is it only takes about 20 minutes a week to implement. Now, while 2 to 4% a month doesn't sound like much, I show you exactly how we took my IRA from $111,000 to over $500,000 in just 19 months without huge risk. I'm not telling you this to brag, just to show you that you could do this too. So to learn more about this program, go to cashflowmachine.io. That's cashflowmachine.io, and you can learn more. What else you got?
All right. So let's play with some of the low-hanging fruit. Okay. So these are level 2 or 3 on the aggression scale. Okay. The first one, of course, is getting your kids on payroll. Yes. Now, I know that that's a very common strategy. Most people will put their kids on payroll for $3,000 to $5,000, maybe $7,000 if they're bulking it up, enough to put away for an IRA. We actually recommend getting your kids on payroll for 2024, almost $43,000 a year per child. Now, really? Let me explain. Let's explain how we get to that number. Okay. The first one is you have the minimum standard deduction that is not taxable. Okay. Typically that's running at about 12.4, 12.5, changes every year. Okay. So let's call it 12.5 for easy of our numbers. You have the 7,000 for the IRA, which puts you at about 19.5. Right. On top of that, if you're an entrepreneur or an investor, depending on if it's real estate investments, right? Typically more real estate investments, But if you're a business owner, you can also set up a 401k program for your business, right? So if your children are employees on your business, you can also do another $23,000 at this point that is non-taxable, right? If, as long as it's all deferred into the retirement plan. Now, the biggest question, and Mark, I'm going to beat you to the punch, right? Well, how do you pay kids, a seven-year-old, because you can start at seven. How do you pay a seven-year-old $43,000, okay? There's a very specific court case that says you have to be able to prove the job that they can do. Now, in this court case, they talk about the five levels of cute, okay? And it's literally the judge, five, cute, what? Cute, 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 okay? Five levels of cute. So, and it can't just be, you know, dad saying, yes, my kids are adorable, right? And they qualify. The easiest way to do this is to actually take your child to a modeling agency, right? And have them confirmed, you know, would you hire my child for photography, for video, for whatever, okay? Now, this doesn't work for all parents. Some parents don't want their kids on pictures. That's fine. It is what it is. Find other jobs that they can do, cleaning, sweeping, filing, whatever it is, based on their age. It has to be age appropriate and the work has to be done. But the benefits of going with either a photo shoot or a video modeling gig is that, let's say, for example, you're into real estate investing, okay? And you've got a website with your properties, your Airbnb properties, whatever it is, and you've got your kids pointing at the house in the picture going, look at this fabulous house, right? Like the little modeling shots that you have of kids playing with the family, whatever it is. I'm in Arizona. The current Arizona cost for a child in a photo shoot is somewhere between $5,000 to $7,000 per shoot. Wow. So if you're trying to get to 45,000, right? And it's seven, so it's what, six shoots in a year? You're updating the brochure, you're updating the website, you're doing a new video on YouTube with the cute kid holding up your product, your entrepreneurial, whatever it is you sell, right? Lots of ways to get children to be paid at whatever rate you need them to get paid at. So,
hey, Shauna, people don't hear about this stuff. And it's because this stuff it's buried in the code. We don't want to dig into that stuff that you do, we don't have time to do. So, you know, this is interesting. This is great for people to know. And you went deeper than most people put your kids on the payroll. Can I shift you a little bit? Let's talk. How about investors? What are some strategies that investors can use? Maybe specifically with IRAs, if you want to go into that.
Open it up. Love it. Yeah. And so I always like to be clear because the term investor can be very broad, right? So there's, in my world, there's really two different main types of investors. Okay. There's investors in real estate and there's investors in other types of investments. Okay. So stocks, bonds, ETFs, mutual funds, whatever kind of investments you're doing. It could also be investments in things like oil and gas, solar, conservation easements, a lot of these kinds of investments.
Right.
So the very first thing across both of them that you have to understand is whether or not you're passive or active, okay? Because that makes a huge difference in the tax code. If you are a passive investor in whatever it is you're doing, all right, you can only use passive write-offs to be able to reduce that income, okay? If you're an active investor, you can use active investments to write off that income. Okay. So you got to know which type of income bucket you're looking at. Now, when it comes to, for example, you mentioned IRAs, one of the biggest, I'm going to call it a combo. We like to look at everything as almost like a boxing match, right? Punch from the left, punch from the right, uppercut, right? Like hit. These things, tax strategies layer on top of each other. Okay. Sure. So if you are in the markets, okay, you may want to consider Forex. Okay. There's a fantastic tax strategy called an SOP, a strategic opportunity procurement. I think that's what it stands for. The IRS trains us to think of everything in initials. My apologies. Sure. So the SOP strategy says, okay, listen, I've made a big gain on something. So let's say you had a business, you sold it, or you had a bunch of stock, you sold it. You were in the NVIDIA split, right? 10 to 1, you got a NVIDIA split, all right? So you've made a ton of money, but you would like to get your money. You're going to have a capital gain. You're going to have some sort of other huge gain. Okay. The SOP will allow you to put 40% into real estate. 60% into Forex. Those deductions with that particular strategy, the combination of those two can often get you a 4-to-1 write-off against your income. So you could put in $100,000, you get a $400,000 deduction. Okay. So when you start looking at which kind of investments you want to be looking at, okay, a lot of this has to do with, are you passive or active? And yeah, where do you want to invest in? So do you like stocks, bonds? Do you like Forex? Do you like real estate? Do you like oil and gas? Do you like solar? Do you like conservation easements, historic preservation, conservation easements, more real estate on that end? Opportunity zones when you start talking about investments, right? All of these things all have their own numbers. And, you know, one of the biggest things that just came out recently, I think it was 3 or 4 months ago, the IRS released for conservation easement investments specifically, the maximum deduction is 2.5-to-1. So,
wow.
Right.
That's a new thing.
That's a new thing.
Went from 10-to-1 to like 4-to-1, wasn't it?
Yeah, 10-to-4 to 2.5. Okay. Wow. And it really becomes... how do I want to say this? When you're looking at investments, any kind of investment at all, one of the most important things you can do is ask the promoter, like whoever's showing you this investment. Number one, do they have a PLR, a private letter ruling? Because right, if they do not, you need to understand that your risk level just went from a level 2 on the aggression scale to probably a level 7 or 8. Okay. And that's your choice. You just need to know that's where you are. Secondly, when the IRS comes out and specifically says we will only allow 2.5 times on this type of investment, if you're in an investment that has a 10-to-1, for example, let's say you have one of the old conservation easements, 10-to-1, when the IRS announced 2.5, they also announced a relief program. If you feel you got sucked into, right, if you feel you got sucked into something that maybe isn't 100% above board, we're going to allow you to report it. Of course, they're going to allow you to report it. They're going to allow you to report it and not pay penalties and interest if they then figure out it's bad.
But so, that was made under the old under the old rules. They can't go retroactively, can they?
Oh, yes, they can, Mr. Bird. Oh, really? Let's talk. If you want, we can talk about retroactive. The IRS can audit you typically 3 years back. That's the standard baseline. They're just looking at something that's 3 years back. 3 years back, okay? If they don't like what they see, they can open 3 years to 7 years. Okay. 7 years. Okay.
If there's fraud, right?
If there's fraud, it's forever.
Oh, okay.
Forever. So if you underreport your income, underreport income or overreport expenses by 25%, it's considered fraud. And they can open up every year you've ever filed, ever, forever, since you were 16, like whenever you started filing tax returns. Okay. So the reason why they throw out these, you know, relief programs, as they call it, is they're effectively telling you, if you were in a 10-to-1 conservation easement and we audit that conservation easement, even if it was 6, 10, whatever years ago, we have the right to come look at you if you're over the 25%. So they're giving you signals here that you're going to want to check with the tax attorney, with your tax CPA, and with your tax strategist, those three distinct parties, if you're in a 10-to-1 conservation easement. So the investor side, when we talk about using investments to get tax deductions specifically, there are always good players and bad players, right? Yeah. There have been people, you know, we look at the oil and gas world. There have been drilling fields that have been open for 60 years. They've never not hit oil. The likelihood you're not going to get your money back is very low, right? They're working in known fields. And then you get speculative drilling. And so from that standpoint, it's a much higher investment risk, but it's also a much higher investment return. So You've got to decide what it is you're looking for. So,
right. Wow. Yeah. What about specifically to IRAs? Anything special you want to talk about there?
Yeah. So sorry, you got me off on a tangent about investing and we were started with IRAs. My bad. So yeah, I think one of the biggest thing that we're seeing right now with IRAs. So of course you have your baseline, right? Your low hanging fruit. So your self-directed IRAs, you know, again, what do you want to invest in? Okay. So if you like stocks and bonds, a regular IRA is just fine. You control it. You can put it in E-Trade. You can do whatever you want inside the IRA of stocks, bonds, that kind of thing.
Yep.
If you want to have a little more control and you want to be able to access different types of asset classes, like real estate, for example, you can do a self-directed IRA. Okay. So it's still an IRA from that standpoint, but it's now self-directed. So you can control it getting involved in a business. You can control it getting involved in real estate. You have more flexibility. I'm going to put a huge asterisk right here. Okay. If you do it wrong, you can blow your IRA, your qualified status, and the entire thing can become taxable.
Hmm.
So we have seen cases where people will take their IRA, set up a C corporation. It's typically called a ROBS, R-O-B-S. They'll take their IRA or their 401k. They'll open up a C corp, open up a business in it. They'll take salary, but the salary is deemed too big by the IRS. And the entire account becomes taxable all in 1 year.
Wow, yeah, yeah.
And you don't have the cash because you bought a business with it. So yeah. there can be some issues there. So if you're going to do any of the ROBs, the self-directed IRAs, any of those, please, please, please work with an expert. And I am not an expert in this area, right? There are experts that only do self-directed retirement investment type stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
I want to bring up the third category because a lot of people miss it or don't even know that this exists. You can actually take IRAs and convert them either to Roth, okay, which is still a qualified, still think of it like an IRA. There's still rules and regulations and what you can and cannot do with that money, okay? You can also convert an IRA or 401k or whatever those, any of the qualified plans into life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And I know many people immediately hear the term life insurance and the brain goes, oh, no, put up a wall, life insurance. It's an icky thing. We don't, you know, slimy sales insurance guy, whatever. Life insurance is a tool like yeah. anything else. Okay. And what knowing where you're trying to get to, taxes is a big game of chess, right? You have all the pieces, but you need to know the rules and the goal. Like, what are you I need more retirement. I want to buy a business. I want to set up my grandkids for life six generations down, right? Insurance is an amazing tool. And when you do a conversion from an IRA, a 401k, a SEP, like whatever it is that you have into life insurance, you're effectively completely releasing yourself from what we call the shackles of the qualified retirement plans, okay? Once the money's in life insurance, you can do anything you want to with it. You want to buy a boat for personal reasons? Do it. You want to buy a house on the lake for a second home for Airbnb? Do it. There are no restrictions of any kind once you start getting into using life insurance as a tool. Right. So...
amazing stuff. I mean, it's actually you could make money fun, Shauna. So that's great. Kudos to you for making money fun.
Oh, that's sweet of you.
So tell people how they can find out a bit more about you. Is there a website? Is there some kind of resource that they can get from you? Because there's a lot to learn.
There is a lot to learn. Yes. And so depending on how far down that learning path you want to go, of course, the most recent book, The 6% Life. So especially for entrepreneurs. This is a good one. It goes over 7 of our favorite tax strategies. Some are really big, you know, in the hundreds of thousands of dollars to the millions plus. Some are nice and small. And it goes over the pitfalls, what you have to watch out for, and making sure you have the right documentation, all those things. Our YouTube channel, of course, you can find us, Tax Goddess, on YouTube. Tons of education on almost any subject you can think of. And of course, if you're looking at all of this going, I don't want to learn it. I just don't want to pay more than I absolutely have to.
Right.
The easiest way to do it is go to taxgoddess.com. You can book an appointment right there with our team and we'll gather some data and see what kind of results we can get for you.
Super, super. Well, Shauna, it's been a pleasure talking with you. I got a lot out of it. I hope everybody that's listening got at least one nugget. That's the goal. Every time you listen to this podcast, you need to take away one nugget. So thank you so much, Shauna, the Tax Goddess, for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, for sure. And for everybody else who's listening and watching, thank you for your time. And remember what I always say, never give up your power in your health, your wealth, or your time. Have a great day, everybody. See you next time.
You've been listening to the Wealth Architect Podcast with Mark Yagi. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.